dark-haired and grey-eyed, proud and stern of glance. He was cloaked and booted, as if for a journey on horseback, and indeed, though his garments were rich, and his cloak was lined with fur, they were stained with long travel. He had a collar of silver in which a single white stone was set. His locks were shorn about his shoulders. On a baldric he wore a great horn tipped with silver that now was laid upon his knees. He gazed at Frodo and Bilbo with sudden wonder. "Here," said Elrond, turning to Gandalf, "is Boromir, a man from the south. He arrived in the grey morning and seeks for counsel. I have bidden him to be present, for here his questions will be answered." Not all that was spoken and debated in the council need now be told. Much was said of events in the world outside, especially in the south, and in the wide lands east of the mountains. Of these things Frodo had already heard many rumours. But the tale of Gloin was new to him, and when the dwarf spoke he listened attentively. It appeared that amid the splendour of their works of hand, the hearts of the dwarves of the lonely mountain were troubled.
"It is now many years ago," said Gloin, "that a shadow of disquiet fell upon our people. Whence it came, we did not at first perceive. Words began to be whispered in secret. It was said that we were hemmed in a narrow place, and that greater wealth and splendour would be found in a wider world. Some spoke of Moria, the mighty works of our fathers that are called in our own tongue Khazad-dûm, and they declared that now, at last, we had the powers and numbers to return." Gloin sighed. "Moria, Moria, wonder of the northern world, too deep we delved there and woke the nameless fear. Long have its vast mansions lain empty since the children of Durin fled. But now we spoke of it again with longing, and yet with dread, for no dwarf has dared to pass the doors of Khazad-dûm for many lives of kings, save Thror only, and he perished. At last, however, Balin listened to the whispers and resolved to go, and though Dane did not give leave willingly, he took with him Ori and Oin and many of our folk, and they went away south. That was nigh on 30 years ago. For a while we had news, and it seemed good. Messages reported that Moria had been entered, and a great work begun there. Then there was silence, and no word has ever come from Moria since. Then, about a year ago, a messenger came to Dane, but not from Moria, from Mordor, a horseman in the night who called Dane to his gate. The Lord Sauron the Great, so he said, wished for our friendship. Rings he would give for it, such as he gave of old, and he asked urgently concerning hobbits, of what kind they were, and where they dwelt. For Sauron knows, he said, that one of these was known to you on a time. At this we were greatly troubled, and we gave no answer. And then his voice was lowered, and he would have sweetened it if he could. "As a small token only of your friendship, Sauron asks this," he said, "that you should find this thief," such was his word, "and get from him, willing or no, a little ring, the least of rings, that once he stole. It is but a trifle that Sauron fancies, and an earnest of your good will. Find it, and 3 rings that the dwarf sires possessed of old shall be returned to you, and the realm of Moria shall be yours for ever. Find only news of the thief, whether he still lives and where, and you shall have great reward and lasting friendship from the Lord. Refuse, and things will not seem so well. Do you refuse?" At that his breath came like the hiss of snakes, and all who stood by shuddered. But Dain said, "I say neither yea nor nay. I must consider this message, and what it means under its fair cloak." "Consider well, but not too long," said he. "The time of my thought is my own to spend," answered Dain. "For the present," said he, and rode into the darkness. Heavy have the hearts of our chieftains been since that night. We needed not the fell voice of the messenger to warn us that his words held both menace and deceit, for we knew already that the power that has re-entered Mordor has not changed, and ever it betrayed us of old. Twice the messenger has returned, and has gone unanswered. The third and last time, so he says, is soon to come, before the ending of the year. And so I have been sent at last by Dian to warn Bilbo that he's sought by the enemy, and to learn, if may be, why he desires this ring, this least of rings. Also we crave the advice of Elrond, for the shadow grows and draws nearer. We discover that messengers have come also to King Brandon Dale, and that he is afraid. We fear that he may yield. Already war is gathering on his eastern borders. If we make no answer, the enemy may move men of his rule to assail King Brand and Dayan also.
You have done well to come, said Elrond. You will hear today all that you need in order to understand the purposes of the enemy. There is naught that you can do other than to resist, with hope or without it. But you do not stand alone. You will learn that your trouble is but part of the trouble of all the Western world. The ring. What shall we do with the ring, the least of rings, the trifle that Sauron fancies? That is the doom that we must deem. That is the purpose for which you were called hither. Called, I say, though I have not called you to me, strangers from distant lands. You have come and are here met, in this very nick of time, by chance as it may seem. Yet it is not so. Believe rather that it is so ordered that we, who sit here, and none others, must now find counsel for the perils of the world. Now, therefore, things shall be openly spoken that have been hidden from all but a few until this day. And first, so that all may understand what is in the peril, the tale of the ring shall be told from the beginning even to this present. And I will begin that tale, though others shall end it.
Then all listened while Elrond in his clear voice spoke of Sauron and the Ring of Power, and their forging in the second age of the world long ago. A part of his tale was known to some there, but the full tale to none. And many eyes were turned to Elrond in fear and wonder as he told of the elven smiths of Eregion, and their friendship with Moria, and their eagerness for knowledge, by which Sauron ensnared them. For in that time he was not yet evil to behold, and they received his aid and grew mighty in craft, whereas he learned all their secrets and betrayed them, and forged secretly in the Mountain of Fire the one ring to be their master. But Celebrimbor was aware of him, and hid the three which he had made, and there was war, and the land was laid waste, and the gate of Moria was shut. Then through all the years that followed he traced the ring. But since that history is elsewhere recounted, even as Elrond himself set it down in his books of lore, it is not here recalled. For it is a long tale, full of deeds great and terrible, and briefly though Elrond spoke, the sun rode up the sky, and the morning was passing ere he ceased. Of Númenor he spoke, its glory and its fall, and the return of the kings to Middle-earth out of the deeps of the sea, borne upon the wings of storm. Then Elendil the Tall and his mighty sons, Isildur and Anarion, became great lords, and the north realm they made in Arnor, and the south realm in Gondor above the mouths of Anduin. But Sauron of Mordor assailed them, and they made the last alliance of elves and men, and the hosts of Gil-galad and Elendil were mustered in Arnor. Thereupon Elrond paused a while and sighed. "I remember well the splendour of their banners," he said. "It recalled to me the glory of the elder days and the hosts of Beleriand. So many great princes and captains were assembled. And yet not so many, nor so fair, as when Thangorodrim was broken, and the elves deemed that evil was ended for ever, and it was not so.
You remember? Said Frodo, speaking his thought aloud in his astonishment.
But I thought, he stammered as Elrond turned towards him, I thought that the fate of Gil-galad was a long-ago time.
So it was indeed, answered Elrond gravely, but my memory reaches back even to the elder days. Earendil was my sire, who was born in Gondolin before its fall, and my mother was Elwing, daughter of Dior, son of Lúthien of Doriath. I have seen three ages in the west of the world, and many defeats, and many fruitless victories. I was the herald of Gil-galad, and marched with his host. I was at the battle of Dagorlad, before the black gate of Mordor, when we had the mastery. For the spear of Gil-galad and the sword of Elendil, Aglos and Narsil, none could withstand. I beheld the last combat on the slopes of Orodruin, where Gil-galad died, and Elendil fell, and Narsil broke beneath him. But Sauron himself was overthrown, and Isildur cut the ring from his hand with a hilt shard of his father's sword, and took it for his own. At this the stranger, Boromir, broke in.
"So that is what became of the ring," he cried. "If ever such a tale was told in the south, it has long been forgotten. I've heard of the great ring of him that we do not name, but we believe that it perished from the world in the ruin of his first realm. Isildur took it. That is tidings indeed."
"Alas, yes," said Elrond. "Isildur took it, as should not have been. It should have been cast then into Orodruin's fire, nigh at hand where it was made. But few marked what Isildur did. He alone stood by his father in that last mortal contest, and by Gil-galad only Círdan stood and I. But Isildur would not listen to our counsel. This I will have as Wergild for my father and my brother," he said. "And therefore, whether we would or no, he took it to treasure it. But soon he was betrayed by it to his death, and so it is named in the north Isildur's Bane. Yet death maybe was better than what else might have befallen him. Only to the north did these tidings come, and only to a few. Small wonder it is that you have not heard them, Boromir. From the ruin of the Gladdenfields, where Isildur perished, three men only came ever back over the mountains after long wandering. One of these was Ochtar, the esquire of Isildur, who bore the shards of the sword of Elendil, and he brought them to Valandil, the heir of Isildur, who, being but a child, had remained here in Rivendell. But Narsil was broken, and its light extinguished, and it has not yet been forged again. Fruitless did I call the victory of the last alliance? Not wholly so, yet it did not achieve its end. Sauron was diminished, but not destroyed. His ring was lost, but not unmade. The Dark Tower was broken, but its foundations were not removed, for they were made with the power of the ring, and while it remains, they will endure. Many elves and many mighty men and many of their friends had perished in the war. An Arion was slain, and Isildur was slain, and Gil-galad and Elendil were no more. Never again shall there be any such leagues of elves and men, for men multiply, and the firstborn decrease, and the two kindreds are estranged. And ever since that day the race of Númenor has decayed, and the span of their years has lessened. In the north, after the war and the slaughter of the Gladdenfields, the men of Westernesse were diminished, and their city of Annúminas, besides Lake Evendim, fell into ruin, and the heirs of Valandil removed and dwelt at Fornost, on the high north downs, and that now too is desolate. Men call it Dead Men's Dyke, and they fear to tread there, for the folk of Arnor dwindled, and their foes devoured them, and their lordship passed, leaving only green mounds in the grassy hills. In the south, the realm of Gondor long endured, and for a while its splendour grew, recalling somewhat of the might of Numenor, ere it fell. High towers that people built, and strong places, and havens of many ships, and the winged crown of the kings of men was held in awe by folk of many tongues. Their chief city was Osgiliath, citadel of the stars, through the midst of which the river flowed, and Minas Ithil they built, tower of the rising moon, eastward upon a shoulder of the mountains of shadow, and westward at the feet of the white mountains, Minas Anor they made, tower of the setting sun. There in the courts of the king grew a white tree, from the seed of that tree which Isildur brought over the deep waters, and the seed of that tree before came from Eresea, and before that out of the uttermost west, in the day before days when the world was young. But in the wearing of the swift years of Middle-earth, the line of Meneldil, son of Anarion, failed, and the tree withered, and the blood of the Númenóreans became mingled with that of lesser men. Then the watch upon the walls of Mordor slept, and dark things crept back to Gorgoroth. And on a time evil things came forth, and they took Minas Ithil, and abode in it, and they made it into a place of dread, and it is called Minas Morgul. Then Minas Anor was named anew Minas Tirith, the Tower of God, and these two cities were ever at war. But Osgiliath, which lay between, was deserted, and in its ruins shadows walked. So it has been for many lives of men. But the lords of Minas Tirith still fight on, defying our enemies, keeping the passage of the river from Argonath to the sea. And now that part of the tale that I shall tell is drawn to its close. For in the days of Isildur the ruling ring passed out of all knowledge, and the three were released from its dominion. But now, in this latter day, they are in peril once more, for to our sorrow the one has been found. Others shall speak of its finding, for in that I played small part.